Hearing from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 4, text number 21 to 22. Mora putra, mora saka, mora pranapati, e bhave e more kare shura bhakte, apanake baramane amare samahina, Se Baba Hai Ami Tahara Adina. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. If one cherishes pure devotional service, if one cherishes pure loving devotion to me, thinking of me as his son, his friend, or his beloved, regarding himself as great, and considering me as his equal or inferior, I become subordinate to him. Purport. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, three kinds of devotional service are described. Namely, bhakti, ordinary devotional service, shuddha bhakti, pure devotional service, and vidhi bhakti, mixed devotional service. When devotional service is executed with some material purpose involving fruitive activities, mental speculations, or mystic yoga, it is called mixed or adulterated devotional service. Besides bhakti yoga, Bhagavad Gita also describes karma yoga, jnana yoga, and dhyana yoga. Yoga means linking with the Supreme Lord, which is possible only through devotion. Fruitive activities ending in devotional service, philosophical speculation ending in devotional service, the practice of mysticism ending in devotional service, are known respectively as karma yoga, jnana yoga, and jnana yoga and dhyana yoga. But such devotional service is adulterated by three kinds of material activities. For those grossly engaged in identifying the body as a self, pious activity or karma yoga is recommended. For those who identify the mind with the self, philosophical speculation or jnana yoga is recommended. Devotees standing on the spiritual platform have no need of such material conceptions of adulterated devotion. Adulterated devotional service does not directly aim for love of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, devotional service performed strictly in conformity with the revealed scriptures is better than such vidhi bhakti because it is free from all kinds of material contamination. Is executed in Krishna consciousness solely to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are spontaneously devoted to the Lord and have no aims for material gain are called attracted devotees. They are spontaneously attracted to the service of the Lord and they follow in the footsteps of self-realized souls. The pure devotion, shuddha bhakti, manifested from pure love of Godhead, surpasses the regular principles of the authoritative scriptures. Sometimes loving ecstasy transcends regular principles. Such ecstasy, however, is completely on the spiritual platform and cannot be imitated. The regular principles help ordinary devotees rise to the stage of perfect love of Godhead. Pure love for Krishna is the perfection of pure devotion, and pure devotional service is identical with spontaneous devotional service. Flawless execution of regular principles is exhibited in the Vaikuntha planets. By strictly executing these principles, one can be elevated to the Vaikuntha planets. The spontaneous, pure loving service is found in Krishna Loka alone. Mora putra, mora saka, mora pranapati, e bhave e more kare shuddha bhakti, apanake baramane, Amare samahina ye se baba hai amai tahara adina. If one cherishes pure loving devotion to me, thinking of me as his son, his friend, or his beloved, regarding himself as great, and considering me his equal or inferior, I become subordinate to him. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimati Bhakti Viranta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutunde Ve Gauravani Vracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyade Satarana. Prabhupada mentions three different types of levels of devotional service, namely Shuddha Bhakti, ordinary bhakti, and Vidhi Bhakti. Now, of course, everyone would like to be on the platform of Shuddha Bhakti. But unfortunately, we don't come to the platform of Shuddha Bhakti simply by imagining we're on the platform of Shuddha Bhakti. It would be nice if that was possible. We wouldn't have to go through all the problems of waking up early in the morning, chanting our rounds every day, trying to fix our minds in Krishna consciousness. We just by wanting to be gopis, we just be gopis or cowherd boys, whatever. And then we could go and play with the deities all day long. But that's not how things actually are. One time in Los Angeles, they had a club which was unofficially called the Gopi Bhava Club. I'm sure you've heard of the Gopi Bhava Club. Gopi Bhava Rasamrita Dili Hari Kalo Magna Mohur. The six Goswamis were also members of the Gopi Bhava Club, but they were actually members of the Gopi Bhava Club. But these particular devotees, they had decided that they had read in Prabhupada's purports that if you are an ordinary devotee just following regular principles, you'll go to Vaikuntha. God forbid we go to Vaikuntha. That ordinary place where only people, you know, live forever. That they were afraid of going to Vaikuntha just by following the regular principles of devotional service. They decided, we have to go to Goloka Vrindavan. We're in danger because we're just chanting our rounds a day and spreading Krishna consciousness and whatever. So they decided to have a Gopi Bhava Club, a club where the men and the women met separately and they only discussed from Prabhupada's books the pastimes of the gopis. So this seems rather innocent compared to today's standards, even in ISKCON. So Prabhupada heard about it, and he explained that this club was very dangerous, or these clubs were very dangerous. And the devotees gave different arguments, how it says in the purports, or even in the sloka by Shukadeva Goswami, if one hears about the pastimes of the gopis with Krishna, then if there's any lust remaining within one's heart, that it's dissipated. So Prabhupada said, these people are saying, Prabhupada, that if we just hear these pastimes, we'll become purified. And Prabhupada said, no, that you won't become purified, you'll become putrefied. Of course, if it was a fact, then there's the other side. The devotees become fanatical. You know, I caught a devotee reading the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He should be thrown out of the temple. I heard someone even talk about the gopis. They should be, you know, banned from the temple for 3 weeks. Now, Prabhupada also mentioned that it is not that we're boycotting the gopis. He said that about the Bhakti Godheads. Not that we shouldn't talk about them, but we should understand what context we're talking about them. In other words, we should understand what our actual position is and how what our relationship is with Krishna and his devotees, and not try to imagine something that's not actually, well, for us we can say, based on Shastra, because what's real and unreal right now, we're not so clear on, but the Shastra is very clear on what's real and unreal. So although we may be living in a dreamlike state, which we are, but in order to wake up, we need the guidance of Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, not our imagination or our speculation. Therefore, why one becomes putrefied by imagining, by simply hearing about the gopis' pastimes. Prabhupada said, because it's just simply a symptom of sex desire. Why do they pick out Krishna's pastimes with the gopis? Why don't they hear about Arjuna's pastimes with Arjuna, with Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Why the gopis? Because they think it's some kind of ordinary relationship, or maybe extraordinary relationship between a young boy with young girls. So they think, well, we're bored hearing all this philosophy from the Bhagavad Gita. Let's get into something enlivening. A young boy meeting a young girl at the dead of night. This sounds a little bit more interesting. But actually, in order to understand these pastimes, and in order to understand actually Krishna consciousness, we have to be in the internal energy of Krishna. There's no way of understanding what Krishna consciousness is about from the material energy. And our access to the spiritual energy is not through hearing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. It is not that they're not in the spiritual energy, but our access, our direct access, is only through learning how to utilize this present body and mind and words in Krishna's service. It is not that hearing about Krishna and his pastimes is not devotional service, but for us it may not be devotional service if we have the wrong conception of them. And we won't have the correct conception until we're actually in the spiritual energy. And therefore there's always the danger of mistaking Krishna's pastimes in the internal energy with something in the external energy. It's simply a question of our conception. So generally speaking, as long as we're struggling in the material energy, struggling to control our mind and senses, the tendency is to not be able to clearly discriminate between what's spiritual and what's material. Therefore, our most important thing, as it says in the second canto, is to hear Krishna's pastimes in the external energy. How Krishna is creating in the material world, how Krishna is maintaining the material world, and how Krishna eventually annihilates the material energy. It may not be very interesting to the conditioned soul to hear all this philosophy and these seemingly what they think is mundane activities. Oh, why is Krishna doing all these mundane things? And what does it have to do with me? But what it has to do with me is that I'm absorbed in the illusory energy right now. And for me, it's Karshati. Karshati, mamai vangso jivaloke, jiva bhutak sanatana. I'm having a struggle in the material energy. And what is the struggle? Generally, I'm attached to fruitive activities. I'm worrying about what's going to happen in my future. And I'm lamenting about what happened in my past. That's called fruitive activity. I hope that my future becomes more and more comfortable from the material point of view. What's going to happen in my old age? What's going to happen if I get diseased? I might even die. Sometimes that happens. Maybe even to me it might happen. So we're worried about the future. We have so much concern, and therefore we're making plans for our material future. And we're hoping that maybe Krishna will help us out too. If the social security doesn't work, we hope that Krishna has some security too. And then lamenting, I tried so hard in the past to have a good time, to have a peaceful life, to do so many things, and there were so many obstacles. So how to get rid of those obstacles? What have I learned from the past so I can have a happy life in the future without any problems? So that's called fruitive activities. Working now on the basis of hankering and lamentation. And a little above that is that, all right, I'm not concerned with hankering and lamentation because I'm not the body, but what is this Krishna consciousness really all about? What is the actual philosophy that is about Krishna consciousness? And therefore, on another level, we're speculating, sometimes trying to figure out how to get liberation from the material energy, and sometimes other things, even trying to figure out the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So that's good. All of those are good. It is not as bad, but that's where we're actually at. In other words, as long as we're still in the bodily concept of life or the mental conception of life, we're going to be working on a certain level of devotional service. Now here it mentions real bhakti, simple bhakti. Simple bhakti is that we're not concerned with the past, present, and future. We're concerned with Krishna. We're not so much concerned with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, because we've come to the actual conclusion of Krishna consciousness. That is, I should chant Hare Krishna and try to listen. Whatever happened in the past, whatever is going to happen in the future, I'm just trying to listen. Whatever is going to happen in the past, whatever is going to happen in the future, I'm going to do my service trying to do it to please Krishna and his representatives. So that's simple bhakti. That doesn't mean, because we've come to the platform of simple bhakti, now we're pure devotees. Because we might be still, to different degrees, in the material concept of life. But that's the way of getting out of the material concept of life. If we do that, then gradually we'll get Krishna's association. And by such association, gradually, our attachment to fruitive activities, which are latent within our hearts, or our mental speculation will gradually be diminished. And then we'll actually come to Shuddha Bhakti. But unless we recognize when we're absorbed in hankering lamentation, unless we're conscious of it, just like Prabhupada says in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Parambhuya Parvakshami Gyanam Gyanam Uttama Yajgatva Munaya Sarves Param Siddhimitya Gata. Now I'll explain to you knowledge even better than I've explained before, knowing which all the great sages have become liberated. So this is the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This is the last six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna has already explained what was the most confidential knowledge. Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad jaji mam namaskuru mam evaishasi yuktaivam atmanam prayana. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me, and the result is you'll come to me without fail. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. Or my dear devotee. So Krishna has explained the most confidential knowledge. Now, five chapters later, he says he's going to explain to us something even better. What's going on? Has Krishna forgotten what he just said? Or he's kind of schizophrenic? Or so what's the better knowledge? He explains about the three modes. So why is that better? Because at the end, it's not that he just... Three modes in relation to what? The three modes in relationship to mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityayavatan brahmabhoyaya kalpate. One who transcends the three modes, one who's engaged in devotional service without any failing, at once transcends the three modes of material nature and comes to the level of Brahman. So Krishna is recommending abhichari bhakti, undeviating devotional service, and how to come to it. He's explaining through understanding the three modes. And how does it help us come to undeviated devotional service? Because while we're performing devotional service, we should be able to identify in which mode we're performing it. If we can't identify which mode we're performing it, then we're in the mode of ignorance. We're steadily in the mode of ignorance. We may think, well, I'm very steady now. But it's not so good to be steadily in the mode of ignorance. Therefore, although we say, well, we perform devotional service without philosophical speculation, so fine, why should I read this philosophy? It's all speculation. No, it's through the getting out, seeing things clearly through the scriptures that we can actually understand how it could come to the platform to become free from speculation. Sounds a little contradictory, but speculation means speculating mostly over the objects of the senses, speculating over our future, speculating over the philosophy, whether it's real or unreal, instead of actually utilizing it to see our daily activities and see whether I'm in the ignorance or now I'm in passion. Now I'm hankering for something. I'm worried about something or I'm hankering for something. So now I'm in passion. So we should see it when I'm in passion, when I'm in goodness, even devotional service in the mode of goodness. It's certainly better than ignorance and passion. We should come to goodness before we can become fixed in pure devotional service. But Krishna describes goodness in Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter in the 17th chapter in detail what a worker in the mode of goodness is, what a worker in the mode of passion, and more or less he equates a worker in the mode of goodness with a pure devotee. That the devotees generally work in the mode of goodness. Mukta sanganaham vadi dritutsaha samanvitaha siddhyasi no nivikara kartasatvika uchate. Mukta sangha ahamvadi, one who works without a false ego. Now we can't just transcend our false ego just by our desire in one sense, but we can, while we're working in our material concept of life, we can think ourselves as Krishna's servants. We may not realize our spiritual identity in that sense, because we can't just overcome the false ego. Only by Krishna's association is the false ego actually dissolved. But we can transcend the false conception of misidentifying ourselves with the body. In other words, there's the difference between understanding that we're not the body and actually realizing who we actually are. When we realize who we actually are, then all these misconceptions are transcended. But at least intellectually, when we think ourselves to be Krishna's servant, then we come under the spiritual energy to that extent. It doesn't mean we're completely under the spiritual energy, but to that extent. And therefore, we're supposed to think like that. I am Krishna's servant. And then this misconception of identifying with the body goes away to some extent. Just like if you put an iron into the fire, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and eventually it becomes just like fire. So we have to know how to apply the philosophy in such a way is that we get out of our material misconceptions. So that is the philosophy. I am Krishna's servant. And therefore, this duty, this activity, has been given to me by Krishna's representative, and I'm doing it just to please him. Now, we may not be, in our heart, may not be overwhelmed with love, and we're just crying ecstasy as we clean the toilet because it's for Krishna. As Bhajan Prabhu was saying in his book we were reading after Mangalarti, that this desire for these emotional experiences is rather artificial. There's no need for it. What is the need for is to see things clearly and to work on that basis. If I'm cleaning the toilet and by Krishna's desire he reveals himself a little bit more to me, then I'll feel some happiness, some devotional ecstasy on the basis of my sincerity of trying to do my devotional service in a very nice way to please Krishna's representatives and Krishna. Which means we should actually clean the toilet, not drop our tears on the toilet seat, thinking that that's sufficient. My devotional ecstasy, the tears have hit the toilet seat, so now I don't really have to clean it because I'm too overwhelmed with emotion. No, clean the toilet seat, and that's really practical devotional service. And when Krishna is seeing that we're actually acting practically, he may reveal himself to us a little bit more on the basis of our sincerity. One time there was one devotee, Vishal Prabhu, who probably everyone knows here. Every time Prabhu would take a morning walk, he would be on the path with his hands folded and offering prayers to Prabhupada. And one day there was water all over the path, and Vishal was standing next to the puddle of water offering prayers to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, "Why are you offering prayers? Just do something practical. Clean that water up." So it may seem rather, unsentimental. Poor Vishal, he was offering his heartfelt prayers, and Prabhupada was just giving this practical, do something practical. But that is reality. We're praying for devotional service, and therefore we should understand what devotional service is and not be simply on the sentimental platform. If we do practical devotional service, then the sentimental platform will become actually real. We'll come to the real platform of sentiment. And if we simply remain on the platform of sentiment without practical devotional service, then our sentiment will probably just remain on the mundane platform too. If we refuse or we deny or we neglect using our present body mind and words in Krishna's service, then where is our sentiment going to arise from, if not only from our past conceptions of life? They may be infused with what we think is devotion, and it is to some extent devotion. Even the Prakriti Sahaji, as Prabhupada says, we should respect them within our mind because their mundane, misplaced sentiments will eventually, if they keep with devotional service, reveal to them by their devotional service that they should give up these mundane sentiments and engage in practical devotional service. Practical devotional service means either worshiping the deity directly or worshiping the deity's property and serving the deity. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also one of those deities. So we make the atmosphere spiritual by going out and spreading the Sankirtan movement, distributing books, chanting the holy names in the street, distributing prasadam. And in the temple, we recognize everything here as the deity's property. And in our home, we recognize it's also the deity property. It's not that we install the deity in the home simply because we like dolls. We used to play with dolls when we were little children, and now we're big children. We can play with bigger dolls or more devotional dolls. No, actually, they're a god. They've come to our home, and it's their home. So unless we keep the home clean, unless we revolve the activities of the home around the deity, then they remain like dolls to us. Therefore, we should understand how to work, which platform we're on. If we're still absorbed in Vidhi Bhakti, we shouldn't try to cover it over, hide our heads. Oh, it's not. I've been in the movement for 20 years or 40 years. It's embarrassing to think that I'm still a conditioned soul. So therefore, I should act as a liberated soul. No, Prabhupada said, first deserve and then desire. That first become a lawyer before you can become a high court judge. First come to see what platform we're actually on, then work to come to the next platform, and don't jump over to an artificial platform. So unless we have come to the platform of actually observing our activities throughout the day and seeing, keeping ourselves in line with our intelligence, the intelligence coming from Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, and keeping ourselves in line in devotional service, then we're still on the lowest platform. Therefore, we should utilize our intelligence and direct our activities in Krishna's service, and then gradually by such direction of devotional service, Krishna will become pleased and reveal to us, and then one day we'll come to the pure Shuddha platform of devotional service by constant engagement above the three modes, especially ignorance and passion, and eventually even goodness. The formula is very simple, but if we put into the formula our mental speculation, and which includes our sentimental feelings about who we think we should be or what we think we should be doing, rather than actually what Krishna thinks we should be doing and Krishna's representatives think we should be doing, then we may go on to doing devotional service for a long time, but we won't make very much progress towards pure devotional service, Shuddha Bhakti. We may not even make any progress towards regular bhakti. We may remain on a platform where we're imagining ourselves to be great devotees. Or we may imagine ourselves to be fallen devotees, and therefore, as a fallen devotee, I can do whatever I want, and at the same time, come to Krishna consciousness once every Janmashtami and think about how much progress I'm making. No, we actually want to become to the platform of Shuddha Bhakti and experience all the glories that explains, then we have to take it seriously. And it's a struggle. It's not going to be easy. The process is simple, but because of our attachment, our misconceptions, our attachment to sense gratification, and our present misconceptions, it's a struggle against them. It's a war. And Maya will try and trick us in so many different ways, and she's no small opponent. If you want to make war against Maya, he's not like a small little person. You just, chant a few rounds and she goes away. No, we have to declare war, and we should expect that Maya is going to try and trick us by so many different allurements, and we're going to sometimes become a lord, but then we should get up and try to, again, perform devotional service. Just like a child, when they're a little baby, they try and walk, the parents encourage them. The parents don't, when the little baby falls down, doesn't come over and say, hey kid, this is the 15th time you fell down. You know, no one in my family, everyone in my family walked at the 14th time at least. You're the only failure we've had so far. You're never going to walk, you rotten little kid. No, the parents keep on encouraging the child. He may fall down 16 times. Still, the parents are encouraging the little child to stand up and try again. And then one day, the child will not only walk, but he'll dance in ecstasy. So similarly, we'll expect. Sometimes we find devotees. They fall down. Even what we thought were advanced devotees. And immediately, the same devotee that we were glorifying as, you know, an avatar, as our only savior, suddenly becomes a demon. We always knew he was a demon, but, you know, we didn't want to tell anyone. We were forced to glorify him, even though we didn't really want to. We knew he was a demon at heart. We could tell he ate more prasadam than anyone else. We knew he was a demon. No, actually, that same person we're declaring a demon now, we may not be a good idea to associate with them if they're now expounding Mayavadi or Prakriti Sahajya philosophy. But we should understand that they're also equally Krishna's servant, just like we are, and Krishna will correct them in his own way. We may not be able to, but Krishna will, and they'll come back to their former position, and even a more glorious position. One day they'll go back to Krishna, just like we're trying to. Therefore, we should at least respect them within our mind, although we may not associate with them. Of course, if they're expounding philosophy, then we may have to clarify what philosophy, what misconceptions they have. But within ourselves, we should not forget that they're also Krishna's servants just like we are, and not spend too much time criticizing their past devotional service, or we should more or less, if we have to, criticize, or as Lord Jesus Christ, don't hate the sinner, hate the sin. That way we won't become entangled and misconceptions. Because someone may visibly fall down and have difficulty, but it's not that we should be so proud we walk away thinking, well, I never have such difficulties. Or if I do have such difficulties, no one can see them. Therefore, everyone thinks I'm glorious, therefore I must be glorious. No, within our own mind, we may have our own struggle. I'm sure most of us have struggles. And therefore, it may not be visible to others what our struggles are, but we're also struggling. And sometimes we don't even know how to struggle. So at least we should know how to struggle. We should know how to come to the bhakti platform so that eventually we can come to the Shuddha bhakti platform. And while we're trying to come to the bhakti platform, there's going to be a struggle. It's not easy. And if you think it's easy, you're not actually performing the proper devotional service to come to the bhakti platform. And we become enamored with this idea, as in the Western world, that there's an easy way, the culture where you cure everything with the pill, the super pill, the super bullet. If we think that there's a shortcut I can take to pure devotional service, I'll go to this guru, he promises, if I simply surrender to him, then I'll become a pure devotee overnight. He has some magic formula. And then you look at his followers, and they're not struggling, and that's the problem. They're just sitting around imagining that they're pure devotees and congratulating each other that you accepted the real guru and that you become a pure devotee. Although in their daily lives, they're just as mundane as everyone else is in the world. But they're convincing each other that you're pure devotees. Therefore, the conclusion is, if Prabhupada knew of a, he did give us the shortcut. The shortcut is chanting the holy name. The shortcut is reading his books. The shortcut is worshiping the deities. The shortcut is following the principles that he gave us. That is the shortcut. He knew what the shortcut was. Otherwise, none of us would be here. Therefore, we should read these books, find out how to come to the bhakti platform, and gradually qualify ourselves for the Shuddha Bhakti platform, and therefore make our lives successful. So, of course, today is the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Interesting enough, if you look at the folio, you'll find that Prabhupada generally didn't speak about pastimes, especially in, if you do, there's maybe 25 or 20, something like that, festival lectures. And of those, half of them are Rath Yatra. And then another, I think, five or six are the disappearance day or the appearance day of his spiritual master. And what we find, even when Prabhupada talked about the appearance days, it's all philosophy. And we find that sometimes devotees, they don't like philosophy so much. They wonder, why so much philosophy? Why not hearing the pastimes? Because we won't be able to understand the, well, there are certainly, if we hear Prabhupada's pastimes, they're certainly enlivening. They're certainly enlivening. I mean, all these acharyas, their pastimes are certainly beneficial, at least some of them. If you read Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura's biography or autobiographies, sometimes we get bewildered trying to figure out, you know, who this person is and what he was doing. Why was he, in his early pastimes, what his life was like? It's bewildering sometimes. Even for his children, it was bewildering. Therefore, we better to try to understand the gift that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given us, that our acharyas have given us, the philosophy. Prabhupada mentions in a morning walk, because we should understand that not only the devotees used to hear about the pastimes of Prabhupada, for instance, and they were glorious. I had Prabhupada's personal association. For instance, every time Prabhupada came to Dallas, I was here. I saw Prabhupada every Rath Yatra, practically speaking, in San Francisco. I saw him, you know, dozens of times, probably in Los Angeles. And I was a temple president, so I had got his darshans in the morning walks. And most of the time, I saw him in Chicago, in India, in New York, in New Vrindavan, so many different times. So, you know, it's not that I haven't seen Prabhupada and experienced directly the wonderful association he had, the transcendental atmosphere that he created. But even witnessing that transcendental atmosphere, or experiencing it, but at the same time, I saw how Prabhupada was preaching. So one time Prabhupada was on a morning walk and Jayadvaita Swami asked Prabhupada, you know, sometimes we see that the acharya, he falls asleep and sometimes he forgets slokas and sometimes it appears that he's committing mistakes. So how are we to understand this? So Prabhupada said, it is not that the acharya is like Krishna. But we should see, ultimately Prabhupada said, how he's preaching the bhakti cult. He didn't mean cult in the same way, how he was a cult leader, but that was Prabhupada's cult meant culture, I guess, in the previously. How he was preaching. So that's the essence. How, just like when I first joined the movement, everyone wanted something exciting. Because that was the nature of, you know, when you're young, you want something exciting. You don't want to be bored because you have a lot of energy. And therefore, Prabhupada used to give classes, and if you look in Los Angeles, you'll find out, and in the videos, there are many devotees surrounding Prabhupada. They were not bodyguards. They were the devotees who were falling asleep. Because Prabhupada used to give talks, and he used to give a lot of philosophy, and it wasn't so entertaining to some of the devotees, and they fell asleep. Matter of fact, they fell asleep even when any one gave class, even when they were chanting japa. They used to have the temple commanders with squirt guns. They walk around squirting people, which is one level up from when the devotees used to hit the headed hit their heads against the wall trying to stay awake during japa. That was certainly more embarrassing than people, guests who would come and see the devotees hitting their heads against the wall. They thought they were in an insane asylum, you know. That's what that usually goes on there. But they were sincere devotees simply trying to stay awake. And that was their conception of how to do it. So philosophy to the conditioned soul is dry. It's not very exciting. But Prabhupada wasn't thinking, well, let me say things in such a way as to keep everyone awake. No, he continued to speak the same so-called dry philosophy because that he understood that's what people needed. He kept on saying to them, explaining how they're not their body. We used to call up, not me, I didn't have a telephone, and I think telephones were quite rare, even in our temple, but the devotees, like our temple president, would call up to find out what Prabhupada was saying, what's the newest philosophy that Prabhupada was saying, and we kept on hearing Prabhupada was telling everyone, you're not your body. But that's what we have to hear. That's the level we're on. We have to keep on reminding ourselves that we're not this body. That takes us right out of the material concept of life and gives us an opportunity to start watching our activities to see whether we're doing our activities on the bodily conception or mental conception or spiritual conception. Then we can make some progress. So Prabhupada knew that, and he expertly preached like that. And he didn't care so much whether people liked it or not from the material platform. If he preached to people's sentiments, then he would have been even more popular. But no, the movement would have not gone on. There wouldn't have been the disciple succession. But we still have to understand those things because we still like to be entertained. In any case, the conclusion is Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he also preached philosophy. And sometimes the devotees, they like to go to the, for instance, the Sharanagati, and go to the, what they think is the essence, or Harinam Chintamani, and hear about the Ekadasa Bhava, the 11 symptoms of a gopi, and Shuddha, what they are, Siddha Pranalias. But actually he explains that we come to that platform of even hearing from the particular methodology after coming to chanting Shuddha Nam, after coming to chanting the pure holy name, where we get directly Krishna's association. Then we can worry about what our relationship is with, you know, our rasa with Krishna is. Right now our rasa with Krishna is not very nice. We're competing against Krishna. So first stop competing against Krishna, either grossly or subtly, and then we can start thinking eventually our rasa will be revealed to us. We just give up this competition, trying to become the laws and trying to become the enjoyers of the material nature. Give up our attachment to these ideas. So this is what Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura, and we can understand that we can glorify Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura because he's represented by Śrīla Prabhupada. Śrīla Prabhupada represented his teachings in disciple succession and told us how to live our lives in such a way as to actually serve him and the previous acharyas. And by doing that, serve the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And by doing that, actually enter into Goloka Vrindavan, into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, in separation. So we honor Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura most by utilizing our daily lives. And today, of course, we have a half-day fast. So that means that we should spend the time hearing and chanting more about Krishna and trying to do more service with the extra energy, the extra time we have. That's the best way of honoring the previous acharyas. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
When we're practicing Vaidhi Bhakti, we're trying to overcome the anartas, and I find that we're trying to identify them. And I would like, if you could please explain how to overcome the problem of not being able to forgive. I guess specifically, if someone hurts your family member, philosophically, you may know, okay, well, that this is the modes of nature, and both people were involved in hurting each other. But and you think that you've dealt with forgiveness, but then it comes up again, and you know that you haven't dealt with it.
No, so you have dealt with it.
But it interrupts your thinking. There,
but we haven't accepted it, that's all. We had the right conclusion, but we just didn't accept the right conclusion fully. And what happens is that the idea comes up again, and then we get worried about it. We become concerned that why is this idea coming up again? Well, we should just accept the right conclusion again. And if we keep on accepting the right conclusion, as you stated, then eventually it'll just go away.
But you haven't made closure with the person. The person, you haven't dealt with them.
You know? Well, you shouldn't worry so much about it. Krishna will deal with them. You don't have to deal with them. We're not the super soul. Everyone has a relationship. Whatever they're doing is a relationship either directly or indirectly with the super soul.
But unless
Krishna directly appoints us and gives us the intelligence how to deal with them, and if we want to deal with them, we can pray to Krishna exactly how he would like us as a servant of the disciple succession, Krishna, how he'd like us to approach them and deal with them. And when it's clear how to deal with them, we can go up to them and deal with them.
Okay.
But if it's not clear, then we should just accept that I'm not the super soul. I'm not supposed to rectify everyone's activities in this world. I'm supposed to rectify my activities and become an instrument for Krishna.
Right, but also the child, we are the protector of the child, and if we failed in that protection, then that's our fault.
Maybe, but we shouldn't be so naive as to think that we're also, you know, the all-pervading super soul and that we're going to protect every living entity all the time, even
just
our own
child.
Even our own child. Balasya neha sharanam pitaro nishinha. You know that verse?
No.
This is Prahlad Maharaj. He had a few difficulties himself. I mean, he's the first recorded history that I know of child molestation in our movement. So he says, Balasya neha sharanam pitaro nishinha nartasya jagadam udavanti majital now taptasya tat prividi yahandrishestas tadvido tanubritam tad upekshatana. So he says the parents may try very hard to protect their children, but sometimes they can't do it. It's just not possible. Only Krishna is all-pervading. And sometimes there may be very nice medicine or a very nice doctor, but still the patient dies anyhow. Sometimes there may be a very strong boat, and probably uses the example of the Titanic, but it's sunk anyhow. So unless Krishna protects the child or the patient or the boat, then it won't sink. And even if Krishna does temporarily protect them, eventually the child's going to die anyhow, the patient's going to die, and the boat's going to sink eventually. Therefore, the conclusion is, we should do the best we can. But sometimes we're not able to do everything perfectly, everything doesn't turn out, we can understand, what can you do? Look at Vasudev. He pleaded with Kamsa that he gave him so much philosophy, but he had to protect his wife the best he could, and therefore he agreed to hand over his children. So look at him, a pure devotee of Krishna, went through thousands of years of austerity to get Krishna as a child with his wife, and he wound up handing his children over to Kamsa, who smashed them onto the ground. So what was he to think? You know, I wanted to protect my children, you know. No, he understood, what can I do? If everything else fails, I have to do the necessary. This is Krishna's arrangement. And even to protect his honor, his word of honor, he gave over the children to Kamsa. So what is our position usually is a lot more less dramatic than Vasudev. Is that all right?
Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Yes.
About 2 years ago, you gave a class on the seventh chapter of Bhagavatam, where there's a verse that talks about if a brahmachari breaks his vows or vanaprastha is just wasting his time in village life, and if a grihastha is not following the regulative principles or sannyasis engage in sense gratification, he should be rejected, or he should be, if you can teach him, you should teach him. But on the question is, what is the role of shame? For example, in other countries, like if a man cheats on his wife, he's generally rejected by a lot of the society. But in America, someone does something like that, they're accepted. Even in a Krishna consciousness movement, you're accepted, even if you do kind of things that are against the social rules.
Well, just in general, social rules are trying to help us make some spiritual advancement. So we should try to apply the social rules in such a way as that people factually and practically become Krishna conscious. Now, adultery, Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita mentions as a way of destroying the society, producing unwanted children, and then completely destroying the society. Therefore, it shouldn't be encouraged or just put off to the side. But at the same time, above that is we don't want to reject people in such a way or become implicated in such a way as that we discourage people from ultimately getting the solution by which they can recognize what they did was wrong, namely chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in devotional service. So it's a balance. We don't want to discourage people from engaging in devotional service. At the same time, we don't want to encourage people to perform sinful activities by which devotional service becomes nullified to the extent it becomes contaminated and sets a bad example for others. So it's a delicate example. And there are so many instructions, respecting people within the mind, but not associating with them intimately, etc. And if someone performs sinful activities, then there should be some consequences, just like a person who performs adultery according to the GBC resolutions, then they can't take the position of a leadership. They're disqualified, or at least now the resolutions are, they can't become a GBC or a temple president or something. So there has to be some consequences, but not the consequence they can't chant Hare Krishna anymore, or we think we're empowered to criticize them or something. Or we become the appointed agent of Yamaraj to to nullify their sinful activities. We shouldn't be so proud ourselves, but at the same time, we should be intelligent enough how to deal with it. Yes.
Back to Mother Sucharya's question, Mara. We accept that we have the responsibility for looking after our children, but sometimes something they've done in the past they'll have to suffer because of that. Just like I think it was the king who was wandering along the Ganges one time, and Mother Ganga appeared to him and agreed to become his wife.
Yes,
but he was not to say anything about what she did with her children once they were born. So she wound up throwing many of her children back into the Ganges. This was preordained. So is it shirking our own responsibility if we try our best and yet we justify that sometimes our children have to go through whatever it is they're going through because of what they've done in the past?
Yeah, what can you do? All you can do is try your best. You can do anything more, but we should be sincere. We should know what our duty is. A lot of times we don't really try our best. We just claim we try our best. And because we're only claiming we're trying our best, therefore we suffer from feelings of guilt because we're not really trying our best. But that's a personal thing. It's a personal responsibility. And as sincere as we are, then Krishna will give us our intelligence, what the best is. But that's something personal. Just like our general devotional service, anyhow, is something personal. It's not that only parents who have children have responsibilities. But anyone who takes responsibility in Krishna's service has a responsibility. And according to how sincere we are, and Krishna helps us, and we are able to perform that responsibility in an actually responsible way, and therefore help us make progress ourselves, and therefore have the intelligence how to help others make progress too. But Maya is an equal opportunity employer. She employs everyone equally, not only the householders, but everyone, the sannyasis, the vanaprastas, the brahmacharis, and even the brahmastras. Brahmastra means a cross between a brahmachari and a grihastha. So she employs everyone equally, and everyone according to their sincerity, Krishna is helping to understand how to overcome the influence of the illusory energy and do our service with more and more effectively. Yes.
You mentioned that devotional service, if someone without knowing the render that kind of ignorance. And my question is, how important is that we have to know the which mode we're rendering devotional service? Like, maybe sometime in a long time movement, we think if anything we do for Krishna, we took granted, the Krishna can accept it. So, you said if you don't know that which mode we're rendering devotional service, it's kind of ignorance.
Yes.
And also, the second thing is, what kind of result will be someone achieve on that without knowing this, any through ignorance, rendering devotional service? It's too.
I mean, if we don't know the philosophy, how much progress we'll make? Probably not very much, unless we're very sincere and we constantly chant the holy name. That in itself is that is the essence of the philosophy. So we constantly chant the holy name and actually chant the holy name, that is calling out to Srimati Radharani and Krishna to engage us in their devotional service, with all sincerity, that is the philosophy. So that's sufficient. Otherwise, we have to be very careful to check what we're doing and what consciousness we're doing it in. And the result will be that we'll remember to chant Hare Krishna. And that will bring us to Krishna consciousness, because that is the process in this age. But we'll see, because we don't check so much, therefore we don't constantly chant. And because we don't constantly chant, we don't constantly remember get Krishna's association. And therefore, we're still on the material platform of awareness. Yes.
Yes, Maharaj. I was curious because I've read something in Prabhupada's book that seems a little contradictory sometimes. I don't know, maybe it's not, but the fact that once you've reached the spiritual platform and you stay there, the time for rituals is not necessary. But at the same time, one should be an acharya and teach by example and show those rituals. So,
we ourselves are not doing rituals. I think one should act as a neophyte, Srila Rupa Goswami says. Although one may actually within himself think of his relation with Krishna and actually be engaged in Krishna's pastimes on the spiritual platform, externally one should continue to act as a neophyte. Our ritual, but it's not rituals. We get up in the morning, we chant, you know, Mangal Arati. That's not a ritual. That is the process of elevation. That is how we get to associate with Krishna, come to the perfectional stage.
Maybe I read it wrong, but what are the rituals, if there are any?
We don't have any rituals in our movement. What we're doing, now for a pure devotee who's actually on the transcendental platform, he doesn't have to come to Mangal Arati, because he's always with Krishna. He can, whatever he's doing, he's with Krishna. But for us, if we don't come to Mangal Arati, we're sleeping, we're in the mode of ignorance. Therefore, he should set the example. Otherwise, people will claim that everyone will claim, "Well, I'm on the liberated platform, just like he is. He doesn't do it. He's liberated. I'm liberated too. That's why I don't come." Okay, thank you. Yeah, one more question.
Here.
We have the microphone. She's not that far away.
Speaking of earlier in your class, you talked about the, you know, talking about Krishna's pastimes and the Gopi Bhava Club and like that. So when devotees have dreams of when they observe, you know, Krishna's pastimes, or particularly Radha and Krishna, are they in imagination, or, you know, are they actually...
Of course they're imagination, but they're good imagination. We like that. That's good imagination. But we ourselves should understand that our imagination is not, we're not the we can say the control, or the manifestator. We don't manifest our imagination. The subtle platform is not our creation. It's given to us by Krishna. When we're thinking of Krishna, that's being given to us by Krishna. So it's not that we created Radha and Krishna in our imagination. They're appearing within our imagination, our ability to imagine. Imagination doesn't mean it's not real. Even when we're so-called imagining something, it's still real. Just like we imagine that there's a rope has become a snake, but there's actually a rope, although we're thinking it's a snake.
So they're actually there witnessing Radha and Krishna's
They're always
pastimes?
Witnessing. They're everywhere. Even when we're not thinking about them, Krishna is everywhere, witnessing everything.
I know, but if a devotee, it doesn't externally appear to be so advanced, and they're saying that they, you know...
Yeah, but this thinking of Radha and Krishna is not the perfectional stage of devotional service. I mean, Kamsa was also thinking of Krishna everywhere. He even saw his two wives as Krishna and Balaram. He was so advanced. But that...
So one shouldn't take such dreams seriously, or,
well,
you know, as an indication that, you know, I'm pure enough to witness such a thing?
Yeah, we shouldn't take it so, I mean, we shouldn't take it as something just completely ordinary, but we shouldn't get so proud as to think that, you know, by my devotional advancement, now I'm even dreaming about Krishna. But we should appreciate, by the mercy of the devotees, by the mercy of my spiritual master, by Krishna's mercy, I've had the good fortune, even when I was asleep, to remember Krishna. Now I should make more of an effort to remember him when I'm awake. So it's great fortune. There's no one can deny it's great fortune. Any opportunity to remember Krishna is great fortune, what to speak of when we're asleep. But now let's remember him when we're conscious, when we're more conscious. I mean, Madhavendra Puri, Krishna came to him in a dream and showed him where he was. So he didn't wake up thinking, well, I dreamt about Krishna. No, then he got up and he called all the townspeople together, and they went and did something for Krishna. They excavated the deity. He didn't think, well, I had a dream that was, you know, I'm a great devotee and maybe I should go back to sleep. No, it's a great fortune to remember Radha and Krishna, to remember Krishna anything, to remember... I remember Saurabhu was saying when he was taking care of Prabhupada in the summer of 1977, Prabhupada was seeming to be asleep, and then he'd wake up. Well, even in his sleep, he would be reciting verses from the Bhagavad Gita. So what to speak of, you know, remembering Radha and Krishna? We can remember the Bhagavad Gita or anything about Krishna. Anytime is great fortune. So it should be appreciated. Well, we should put it in perspective, too. Thank you very much. Grantara Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.
My name is Paladananda Swami Maharaj Ki Jai.